Well, thanks for coming, everybody, to the Heritage Forest Commission meeting. First up, adoption of the agenda. Now, there's a few things with the agenda here. The second point there, we've got adoption of the agenda for number two. That should be approval of the minutes. Okay. Then under 3B, updates to the Heritage Forest Management Plan, it would be, because of this confusion about dates, it would be great to put in brackets amended February 28th, 2023. And then it's really specific.
Amended
February 28th, 2023?
Yeah, last year. Yeah. February 28th, 2023. Because there was confusion about dates. Then under 3G, that should really, we should add and protected areas. So that should read other effective area-based conservation measures, bracket, OECM, bracket, and protected areas, bracket, PA. Because the Heritage Forest will be a protected area if you want an OECM, and they're quite different, those few things. So that would be great if we could do that. Okay. So then we've got approval of the minutes. Now with the minutes from last meeting, which was February 22nd, there was a couple of things here.
Sorry,
can
you just have an adoption?
Oh yeah.
As amended?
As amended?
Yeah.
Great. Got it? Okay, very good. So approval of the minutes from February 22nd, and there was a few things here. If you got that, page 2, under the Heritage Forest Fire Plan, we had quite a discussion about the sign that's actually being installed right now. Actually, the guys are in there right now. I wonder if at the end of that sentence, commission members reviewed the measures taken to mitigate fire hazards in the forest by society volunteers and town over 2022 and 2023.
I'm sorry, which
question is that? Heritage Forest Fire Plan, right at the top. So that could read, to mitigate fire hazards in the forest by society volunteers and towns over 2022 and 2023. I think we went out there about 5 times over those years, kind of a big effort. That would be great. Okay, Brenda?
2022.
And towns. I always try to emphasize this cooperation with the town, right? I think it's important. So sign volunteers and towns over 2022 and 2023. Okay, great. And then down below, again, it's that protected area, because again, the Heritage Forest will be a PA, not an OECM. Other effective area-based conservation measures, bracket, OECM, bracket, and protected areas, bracket, PA. Right? Same as before. That'll be great. And then when we get in there, this is an official designation, so we should have capitalization on protected area. There's two of them in there. First line and then third line. Okay. Under forest maintenance, we've got the tree plant. Again, I just try to be a little bit more specific here. Ace Gipsy will bring this forward to council at the March 13 regular council meeting. See what field will work out. Okay. And then under D, the arrows, just to be more specific, we're talking about the Brand Festival. So the Aerosmith Naturalists will be hosting 2 forest bathing groups of less than 10 people each in the forest for the Brand Festival. Just wasn't clear why that was being, like, it's not just forest bathing, it's for the Brand Festival. Okay? Ready? Okay, last point, third page, control of invasive squirrel population. Now with this, that last sentence, C. Whitfield and C. Bates will investigate population control in other municipalities and submit a report to accompany a motion for recommendations to council at the next meeting. Cormac and I aren't sure where that phrase came from.
So my recollection is that we were going to come forward to the commission, not to the council. And if we could change one word in there, I would be happy.
Okay.
Council to commission.
Okay. How about that? Yeah, because that's really what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I further suggest that, just to clarify, was that a written or verbal report?
Verbal.
It would be verbal. Perfect.
Right.
So if you had a few words, that would clarify that.
Huh? Verbal.
Someone says report and I get pretty excited at my computer typing really quick.
Good point.
So verbal and commission.
Verbal report.
You good with that, Cormac?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
Are you good? Okay, great. Okay. So with that, let's carry on. Do we need a motion to approve
as amended?
As amended. The minutes from our February 22nd meeting. Emma?
I shall move.
Thank you. Okay. There we go. Okay. Business arising from the minutes. I've given everybody kind of a stack of things that we've been working on and they're finished, right? So I just thought to bring them so people can see what's been going on. So the You Are Here map, that's that first one up. And it's been in, that's not that one. The You Are Here map, it is this, but I'm talking about a different sign. So we've got five of these now in the Heritage Forest. And if people get lost now in the Heritage Forest, let's just say it's not our fault.
You have no idea how many people come out at the Dogwood Road, Hemsworth Bank entrance, and just stand there and look at it. I've never seen it before, and where's my car gone?
Yeah, well, we've got five really visible. So we have got the Beach Creek is on there correctly. The trail is on there correctly. We've got additional information in here. The private property thing, like people shouldn't be walking up into the Crown Mansion if they read the sign. I don't think we can do anything else with this. There's even a compass on the darn thing. So that's done, which is fantastic. Okay, updates to the Heritage Forest Management Plan, bracket February 28, 2023. So this document, I'm not sure last time out, a year ago, I presented this to the commission. And I wasn't sure exactly if, that's the next one, I wasn't sure exactly if I explained it properly, like why I did this. So why I did it was to get at page 2 at the very bottom, the bird window. So it took me about 2 weeks to do this a year ago. But to get at what should be the non-disturbance or no loud disturbance timing for breeding birds in Heritage Forest. And that's January 1st to August 31st. So this whole document kind of leads to that conclusion. And why I brought it up again is because there has been confusion about dates, about the management plan and this kind of stuff. So I just thought maybe it's worth just talking about it a little bit more. Those two pages are all of the provincial and federal legislation and best management practices that deal with birds. And so that is how that date was arrived at, January 1 to August 31. Okay.
Can I just, so we went back and forth on that, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And, but this has not yet been, is that correct? Been amended?
That's not the management plan.
Oh, that's not the management plan.
That was the rationale when I presented 1 year ago.
Right.
See, I amended the plan in November of 2022.
Yeah.
And then amended the plan in February 28th of 2023.
Yeah.
And then asked all last year, how come that thing's not getting approved? And then it finally came out that there's been confusion about the dates. We're not sure what mayor and council approved. Was it the November amendment or the February amendment? And that's where you were bringing it up March 13th at the council meeting.
And then I was asked not to, to put it off, to wait and see what the results are, I think, of the wildfire.
Which totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. You've got a high-priced consultant company out there, and they're coming up with wildfire strategy for the town of Quantico Beach. What I did with that management plan was based on BC Fire Smart Standards.
Yeah.
And it's totally in sync with that. But who knows? They might come up with something else.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's where that's at. And I think that plan was due, I think in the fall. Yeah. So we've got another meeting in September. So I'll ask in September.
Yeah.
But it may be that we actually don't have that fire strategy yet. Okay, so fire strategy.
Oh, well, that kind of leads into C, too.
Yeah. Fall of 2024. Yes, exactly. So that's fine. So we'll discuss that in September about the Heritage Forest Management Plan adoption, basically. Then the next one up, the Heritage Forest Fire Plan, well, that's the sign that's being installed as we speak right now. And so I worked on this with Shinjini Mehta, with Peter Cornell. We spent quite a bit of time on it. And the idea was, with that sign, to the uninitiated, if you're walking on that Emsworth path for that trail, you could walk right by the 2 years of work that we did in there and not really kind of recognize what was going on. So that's why we thought, let's do the sign. It's right at the gate. It's just kind of eye level. And I think it'll be interesting for people because there is concern about forest fire, right? It's on the media a lot. And I think it's kind of comforting for people to know that, hey, we've been taking steps. So that sign is up basically by now. So that's very good news. Soil floods in Beach Creek. Rob, could you give us an update? I noticed in the minutes there was mention of survey caps in our last February 22nd meeting. Could you talk about that, like survey caps? What is that?
Oh, all it really is just like a stake in the ground.
Yep.
And we have, I believe it's 5 of them there, and we survey them. So it's just kind of like a survey control point.
Okay.
So you just survey the top of it, and then we've just, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, surveyed them again, and we're going to keep surveying them every 6 months. If they move significantly, then we'll survey them more sooner, like probably monthly instead. If they're not moving at all, then we'll do it annually. Just keep an eye on it type of thing. I suspect it'll be a seasonal thing, because you'll be sloughing in, like, basically a little bit over the winter, probably, you know, big storms, like, in November and that.
Yeah.
Might see some saturation and some movement, so we'll be able to gauge and then give us a better idea of how to manage it.
Okay.
If it is an issue.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's definitely moving, like you can see that, but how quickly and is it causing, because we'll, at that time we'll bring in our geotechnical engineer and kind of figure out how quickly it's moving and if there's any small mitigation we can do, which is usually planting certain plants along there, ones that hopefully the deer don't eat. And then talking with our biologist as well, that if portions of it are a natural process and he wants to maintain those for a reason, then we'll let some swapping happen. But if it's directly impacting, which in some places historically it has, where it's actually gone into the creek and pinched the creek, then that just silts up the creek and that just can't be good for fish.
Yeah.
So we'll pull all that picture together once we know how quickly it's actually moving. So I'd anticipate we'll have a decent idea in a year, and then just by year we'll just have a better idea.
Willow cuttings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Willow cuttings would work really well there. Willow likes the full sun. And, you know, cuttings about yay long, stick them in the ground about 6 inches out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if there's too much out of the ground, it dries out and dies. But willow would probably work, like, for no money. Actually, and who's just, since we're talking about it, stream-side native plants up in Bowser. He's fooling around with cuttings. Like, for this pollinator garden, that's where we got all our plants from. I was up there dealing with those guys the whole bunch, and, oh my God, you got to do with cuttings. Anyway, if it ever came to that or whatever.
Yeah, it's something, my caution with that is I've used it quite a few times. It works really well. Really well. One time though, it was an Okotoks, and it was just a tiny one there planted. There's 1,000 stakes put in, and then they started like actually leaving, and then within a day, all those leaves were gone because the deer were like, "Ooh, these are tasty."
Oh, right.
So just, again, it's just making sure either like as forestry does, you can put those little things around it to protect them as they first start, because it's just I think the first growth that the deer really like, then after that, they'll taste as good. So if we can protect them either that or put snow fencing around them, something to keep the deer out and deter them.
That's a tiger refuge in there.
Yeah.
That's like you see them on the golf course and they go there at night. And like we did that same project last year with stream keepers. I was amazed. They're eating sword fern down there. Like, well, deer don't eat sword fern. Like, it was really weird. And, but lots of tracks, like it looks like that's where they're going to sleep.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, well that's great. That sounds like it really is.
Can I just ask them? So we put them in, and then now we've done one set of readings. Is that like?
Yeah. So the initial set where they were, and then 1 6-month set. So we'll do them again
in 6 months.
6 months, and it'll be that second 6 months where we really go, oh wow, because
right,
just to see if it's moving, and whether we then go monthly or yearly.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Just because I have the golf course meeting next week, so I'd like that information to put that on their agenda as well.
Oh, okay.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, well, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Heritage Forest brochure. You got it.
Lovely.
Yeah. And, I think that turned out, you know, quite good. We wrote a bunch of stuff, a bunch of new photographs. That map is the same as the You Are Here map.
Right.
So it's consistent. Because what I was seeing is people would actually take the brochure, do the walk, and they would leave it in the kiosk all folded up with just the map showing. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So they're actually walking around with that map, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So that's done. That's good. So that is on the Society website. It's upstairs as well. I'm trying to think, there's another place where it is. It's upstairs, the information desk upstairs. And so it's all over the place. And I put them out weekly or 2 weeks or whatever. Get them talked out. Okay, Heritage Forest Reserve bylaw. With that, well, first of all, I've got a description of the Heritage Forest Reserve bylaw on the Society website. It's described on the membership form that we use, and I talked about it at our AGM about a month and a half ago. With that, we are getting inquiries. Someone did pass not that long ago. And there's a significant amount of money coming to the town to be spent on the forest. And the commission decides how it gets spent. Just so we're really clear on that. So these are longtime society members. But the original discussion was quite a long time ago. This fellow approached me and had asked about it, like this is like a decade ago. What if, well, we didn't have a bylaw, we created a bylaw, and then the question was, how does somebody know that those monies don't go to fill potholes in the road or, you know, whatever? And so the hook was the decision how it gets sent comes back to the commission. Now, a question I have, actually, for the town is, so the executor did contact me recently, and I've got an idea of how much. It's significant. Will we be informed when those, when the estate settles and the money goes to town, it sits in an account with the town, will the commission be notified that, hey, guess what, guys? You know, we just got this donation for the membership or for the maintenance of the Heritage Forest. Not a bad idea, that we at least know that it's there. And there was someone else actually just contacted me, 2 weeks ago, same thing. She's still alive. But same thing, you know, wanting to leave money in the will, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of a request, is that part of the mechanism wasn't described in the bylaw about when monies do go to the town that the commission would be notified. But it's probably not a bad idea that at least we know, hey, there's this sitting there. What do we use it for at some point?
Well, something will always come up that will cost money, so you can count on that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it does cost money, you know, all the time. And,
yeah.
But the idea with people leaving money in their will, of course, that it's very carefully spent or directed or, you know, whatever. So who would...
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we can make the request, I think, for staff to do that, or I don't know if we want to make a motion asking that the commission be informed if there's monies, but either way.
Yeah. Would Heather be the person? I know Heather's not around right now, but...
Yeah, well, it would probably come through finance, so...
Just sending an email to Roger right now.
Okay, perfect.
After the two questions are, is there a separate account? So do we
figure
that somehow, which I'm sure there is, but we'll ask. And then does the town notify the committee when a donation is made, and can they please in the future?
Perfect. Okay, done. So
there. I wonder if we could get a total each time we have a meeting. It would be kind of interesting to see. Like
how about just once, you know,
or
because that's a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like
we're trying to change.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anytime there's a change.
Yeah. Like another $1 million comes in.
That is right. Hang on. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, and so, like, with the society, like, we get the odd lump sum donation of $100 or $200 or even $500, you know, that kind of stuff that we use, like, for the website and all this kind of stuff. But that's not what this is. Okay, fantastic. Moving right along then. Other effective area-based conservation measures and protected areas. Right, Randy? Right? Because this will be a protected area. Okay, a little bit of an update on that. I did meet with Graham Sackey of Mabry. You know what Mabry is?
I used to, but
it's Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Reserve Research Institute.
Yeah.
Who have taken over the Lee House downtown here. Right? They're moved in there now?
Yep.
So we're going to see more of those guys. I met with Graham and Adam Walker a while ago, a month ago or something like that. And I also spoke to Stuart Guy, who's the executive director with BC Nature. They had proposed to do mapping on OECMs and TAs, like around the province. So I spoke to Stuart about it. He put me in touch with somebody else. basically, the upshot of it all is Graham Sackey is going to stickhandle this. And the deal with the town was that if there's several areas that could be designated as OECMs or CAs, but no work for the town. That was kind of the bottom line of that. And that's where this Graham Sackey has the budget, he's got the manpower, that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of moving along.
My understanding is he would make a presentation, I think, to council in the next 6 months or something.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Because I know he's busy right now with lots of things.
We're really busy.
Yeah.
And so I'm the kind of the voice whispering in the ear. Hey, remember you said, how do we get this going, right? So I'll continue to do that and not be a pain or anything, but just, hey, if we're going to do this, we should get going on it. And now, just again on that, the OECM and the PA designation, so the objective federally and provincially is to protect 30% of biodiversity in the province of BC and all across Canada. And that's terrestrial and marine. And just so you know, the number from Mabry, within their the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Reserve, we were sitting at, I believe it was 1.7% terrestrial and 3.5% marine currently. So we've got a ways to go.
Okay.
Right? But every little bit, like DL-10, Brandon Creek Ravine, the Berwick, Wellfield, maybe Milner Gardens. Milner Gardens is own conservation. I think Milner would be a slam dunk. Some of these, like the Berwick Wellfield, is owned ALR. And that's a little freaking, I don't know if that actually works. Brandon Creek is own conservation. So like a bunch of these areas are slam dunk for Quality Compete. So we should do it. Okay. That's that. Now, control of invasive squirrel population. And Cormac James was going to bring us up to date on that.
Sure. So I did have a look at what other jurisdictions do. And the only thing really useful and thorough that I could find was a protocol in the UK where gray squirrels are an invasive species. So I've got the protocol here. I downloaded it as a PDF. And just read you one sentence. We can get into details if you like. But this protocol is for members of the public who wish to control gray squirrels using live capture cage traps. Okay? So which is what we had talked about in the last meeting. Lays out with respect to UK laws how to go about doing it. So here it's an invasive species. The Wildlife Act does not cover gray squirrels, my understanding, and this might very well be a useful protocol. So it involves selecting a location. Doing pre-trapping unless there's a specific squirrel being targeted, in which case the pre-baiting rather is not necessary. You just bait the trap for a particular squirrel that's using the site. That's not our case here. It's not specific squirrels. It's an area along Hamsbury that is the issue. Pre-baiting the area and getting the squirrel attracted to the area and then putting a trap in place. And not setting the trap, getting them habituated to using the trap as the protocol, and then when you've got some use happening and your confidence to squirrel, then you set the trap, and it's a live trap. And then they describe a protocol for putting a cover over the trap, and then how to euthanize the squirrel. They describe how to go about doing that humanely. One of the key things here, I think, in terms of consideration of the commission and the society, is the amount of effort that would be required to do this. So once you've figured out where to put the traps, then, and you have set them, then under this protocol, it requires checking them twice a day. And again, this is for humane handling. You don't want a, pardon the pun, squirrel going nuts.
Right. That was really bad.
Sorry, yeah.
You had that one ready, didn't you? I thought you were going to say squirrely.
The concept of live trapping, of course, their issue there is red squirrels, like it is for us as well, and also other non-target species that might get into the trap. Check it twice a day, and you release any animals that you don't want
to don't belong there.
Remove. Right.
We still have a few red ones around, but mostly gray and black.
Now, you know, it gets into details on how to humanely dispatch animals and whatnot. That's a detail we don't have to discuss. But in Tom, I took a little walk in the forest and took a look at one spot where he's seen squirrels regularly going back and forth. And I did put some peanuts in on that log that we had looked at, and they are indeed being used. So don't drop them both at this point. So is it possible to habituate a squirrel to a particular site? Might not even be squirrels. Could be anything from raccoons to any other small mammals.
I think we have people in the area feeding them too, because somebody on the clinic place behind me is feeding them regularly, and that I know because they come and they bury them at my place,
mm-hmm.
and that they don't come back to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had one plant pot at 46 peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't tell them. No room for a plant, yeah. So when you find this plant not doing well.
Yeah. So that squirrel is habituated,
yeah.
And if it's coming from the forest where a trap would be placed, then that squirrel could be targeted, right?
If we target the fish and feeding him while we're at it, yeah.
Well, perhaps, but so the Hemsworth Gate, I saw a gray squirrel coming out from the forest the other day, right there. So they're around. So the question is, how much effort ought to be put into this, and who ought to do it? So we need kind of a logistical plan or considerations in terms of costs and personnel to do something like this. So that's kind of where I came to. It's not going to be without cost.
But it is.
It's not going to be peanuts, I'm afraid.
What?
More than peanuts.
There's going to be more than so. There's going to have to be some surveillance because it's more than one location, Tom. It's at least, you know, probably a squirrel moving into your area.
Oh, I've got an alarm in my place.
That's too far away.
I have a lot of trees.
And I've been really saw a squirrel, gray squirrel, coming out of the forest off Hemsworth Gate. So you would have to at least have a trap system, a baiting and trap system there, as well as in the location that we looked at. And there may be others. So some surveillance might be useful. There'd be the baiting component, setting the traps, purchasing the traps, setting the traps, checking on the pre-baiting, and then once you're into trapping, then twice a day the traps would have to be checked, just for humane purposes. So that's what would be involved.
So last time we spoke, there was a neighbor had a trap
mm-hmm.
that we could borrow.
I've asked, and I have not had feedback from that.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Because we were kind of going from a zero cost to cost.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would suggest that two crafts and volunteers to run an operation might be what you'd be looking at.
Yeah, because I'm happy. I live right there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm out around all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a possibility. It could be done within the society in terms of costs for doing something like that.
Yeah, we could.
Okay. Then there's another component as well. And somebody like Angie, who thinks this is a good idea, like to do it on their private property.
I won't execute them, but I might be willing to round some up.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, when you're talking about the traps, because some years ago I was involved helping the SPCA because I had been at a car crash and several pets escaped into the woods. And so my son and I found one the next morning, and then we called the SPCA, and they brought a trap for a cat because there was a three-legged cat in the bush somewhere. And they said they had to make sure it was out of sight because they all get stolen. So there might be a theft issue. And we did get all the animals back.
Yeah.
Happy ending.
Yeah.
So someone's just stealing it, or probably someone trying to think they're protecting the animals?
I don't know. I mean, there are misguided rescuers.
Yes. It's
like the people who tried to save the wolf dog. What a touchy issue, you know?
Yeah.
Hard to deal with that. You know, wish we could deal with the person who let it go in the first place, not the bad outcome for the animal. Yeah.
But if we had cooperating neighbors.
Cooperating neighbors.
Would let us do something on their own.
Non-advertised cooperating neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I have a fence. Well, I've got several fences, but one of them is just the highway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're just on it every day. I see the squirrels with a peanut.
I see three traps at this point. Well, that Murray, his neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Right behind. That's Susie.
Oh, yeah, that's Susie, right? Yeah.
And right behind.
So, you know,
yeah, I know they are. I dropped a tree on them one day.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What about Murray sees squirrels on his property?
He never?
Do you know if he ever sees them on
his property? Oh, he should. They go, our whole area is covered.
I'm picking him up at 12:45 today.
You have a sweet talk with him. Phone and he says hi. Yeah. You know.
Okay. That might be an
issue. You're fishing, are you?
In terms of your skills and the extent to which you would like to be involved. You've already expressed that. So Murray may not be as concerned about certain actions as you are. So, okay, I'll talk to Murray.
Sound them out.
Three traps at this point. That's what I'm counting. So there is one spot that you and I looked at that's well hidden in the forest, and I wouldn't worry about that trap being stolen there. I don't know about the Hemsworth Gate, whether... that is
too pretty dense brush in there.
Okay.
And people don't walk back in there.
Okay.
It's really thick.
So maybe you and I would take a walk again.
Yeah. That'd be funny.
Anyway, I'm happy to share that protocol if people want to take a look at. I don't know whether we need it as a record for the commission or not, but the PDF file.
So just one thing. Okay. So also too, I noticed in the minutes, we've got in basic black and brown squirrels.
Should be gray.
Should be gray?
Yeah.
Back in those minutes. Okay, so on that. So we do have a resident red squirrel population in the four. Like beyond the grassy meadow. Kind of in the center of the loop, of the loop trail. That's where they live, right? And there's been a red squirrel population there as long as I've lived, where I am, for 18 years. What I am getting from people is that the blacks and the grays, they are kind of moving into the forest, right? And so that's where I thought, okay, if we're going to try to maintain that red squirrel population, we should probably try to do something about the black and the gray population, right? So how do we go forward on this? Do we need to make a motion to council about extirpating some squirrels? Like the one way to look at it is it any different than pointing English ivy? Or a Scots broom. It's an invasive species.
So these are alive. Yeah. It's hard.
So is ivy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's a question whether we need to ask permission or whether we just inform or whether, I don't know. Are the red squirrels endangered?
Like, no, they aren't.
They aren't. Maybe they should be.
Well, maybe they should be. But they're around. But it's in the literature about the blacks and the grays are very aggressive, and they actually go after the songbird eggs as well. So if we want to maintain the red squirrel population, we should probably attempt to do something about it. And this, the conservation covenant is really clear about invasive species. It's, so to my mind, maybe it's a given. We've got an invasive species, the conservation covenant is really clear. Invasive species are not welcome in the Henders Forest. Let's go deal with it.
So there are no legal issues here in my reading whatsoever. I mean, Wildlife Act, there's no firearms involved.
Good.
Discharge from...
Don't trust me with a gun, or
so I don't think there's any legal issues from a challenge standpoint on this. Ann's question was, should permission be requested? Should an advisory simply be given to council, or maybe it's just taken care of by the society? I'd say those are three options.
I will inquire to those.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask as well as our bylaw officer, just what, like, I'm guessing it's just an advisory, just out of... Because, I mean, to your point, it says removal of invasive species, but obviously this is probably a little more near and dear to some people's hearts than plant. So it's just an advisory, just to let everyone know what we're doing. The fact that a lot of these are on people's private property and it isn't legal, like that part, I don't think you have to necessarily notify. But in the actual park, heritage forest, we probably should at least tell us the heads up.
See, it's interesting. It's illegal to, it's actually illegal to feed wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
For instance,
it happens all the time.
Well, people feed deer. They feed squirrels. We feed birds. Like, it kind of gets a little gray with the bird thing. But I know that a neighbor of mine was feeding the deer, for a number of years. And, I mean, that's just up to you. And that's what's happening. The squirrels are running back and forth to the forest to the backyard and deer. Right? And so should we just proceed and we'll...
Unless you're here otherwise.
Yeah.
One of us.
Okay, how about that?
Yeah.
And we'll let you know how we meet out in September.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All right.
Good.
Okay. Okay. So, moving on. Forest maintenance. Update on forest maintenance issues, commitments. Rob, I was wondering about the orange stream bed in Beach Creek. It's actually upstream of the concrete tank that's in behind the Crown Mansion. Like, it's well upstream of that tank. Rob and I took a walk in there after the last meeting that we had in February, and it's an unusual yellowish orange substrate. Why? Where? And Rob, you were going to do some soil sampling whenever.
So they did 2 weeks ago. They sampled the soil sample as well as 2 water samples that were taken.
Oh.
We haven't heard back from our testing company.
Okay.
But it's just one. The questions are, one, is it naturally occurring? We do have a lot of naturally occurring ferrous, like iron oxide in town. So it's likely that, but depending on what type, there's 3 different types. So if it's, hopefully it's conclusive that it's just natural. And then the second question is, that's what we use for water samples, that potentially is it strong enough that it might be a hindrance to the fish.
Okay, perfect. So then September, we'll have some results for September. So
yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
It's okay. Fantastic. Thanks. It's kind of interesting that the Browns built that salmon hatchery on Beach Creek. And did you know that Colonel Money built one on Beach Creek just downstream of where the culvert's coming out, like just downstream from East Crescent? In fact, there's some big wooden kind of structures down there. I was in there with tunas a while ago, and we're looking across, and it didn't dawn on me what the heck that was, and then somebody else was telling me about Colonel Money had a hatchery as well, which is probably where Mrs. Brown got the idea. Maybe, who knows?
Hmm.
But it's an interesting structure. They wrote that concrete. It is. I was astounded. Like I just stumbled over it. I was in looking for Holly to pull. And I'd never walked down in there, I don't know, a number of years ago. I was like, oh my God, what the heck is this? A hatchery.
When I first looked at it, because it's so small, I was like, I can't see this for trough, like for horses or anything, because you just wouldn't have that much water in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, a hatchery, just a little hatchery, which is great.
That's pretty neat. Interesting.
Planning ahead, aren't they? They were planning ahead. They're going to catch those guys later.
Yeah. There you go.
So what would they have been catching? What were they rearing there? Was it probably?
Probably
gold.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the speculation with money was brown trout. Fly fishers.
Oh.
Can't even remember who told me that. Anyway, interesting. Okay, so we've got the water sampling going on. Another forest maintenance issue, the Granny Creek tree plant, with the 30 students, we did that for Earth Day. We also got permission, from all the homeowners on Balsam Road, to plant if their properties went down the bank, which it turns out they don't. But we did have permission to do that, and Adam Walker picked up the tab for the trees. That was about $425 or something like that. There's that. Now, Heritage Forest, that's it for previous stuff that was business arising for the minute. New business, Heritage Forest housekeeping. Well, the Brown Property Preservation Society members took part in constructing a pollinator pathway on Hoy Lake Road West. We had 20 kindergarten kids out there for Earth Day. They were quite excited. They got to sprinkle wildflower seeds on that pollinator pathway. The Parksville Qualcomm Foundation donated $500 to the project. It was very interesting. I must have spoke to 100 people that walked by on that trail. Like I live over there, so I had no idea that there were so many people that used that trail, but oh my gosh, it was amazing. The youth and people were just constantly asking, what are you doing? And oh, isn't this great? This pollinator garden thing. So, very successful. Took about 7 days. The town removed the debris, the grass and different stuff that we collected there. That was great. And the town has been watering. The trick is going to be in the summer when it gets super dry for that seed. Like you can't just use a bucket and run water down the side. It'll wash all the seed away. So it's going to have to be kind of a careful sprinkle thing, and I think Lynette is tuned up for that and willing to do that. So that was very successful. The tree bylaw. Now, I realized that the tree bylaw is an ongoing thing, but this two-pager that I gave you guys this morning, and I presented to the commission 1 year ago in May. So I highlighted the second last part of this.
Yep.
And so my only issue with the tree bylaw, whether it applies to the Heritage Forest or not, is we've got the Federal Species at Risk Act that applies to all lands in Canada, whether it's private, First Nation, municipal, provincial, federal, FERA applies. Now that's our great blue heron, right? So that's kind of what we end up calling it. Other species are covered under the Migratory Bird Act, which was amended in June of 2022. And the Migratory Birds Act is federal, and again, it applies to all lands in Canada, whether it's private, First Nation, municipal, provincial, or federal. And so I'm thinking that with those two federal pieces of legislation, they should be mentioned in the tree bylaw, because the tree bylaw does talk about the Wildlife Act. It does say raptors, as defined by the Wildlife Act 1996, osprey, heron, poly, colony, cavity nesting birds. Except that the Wildlife Act actually refers to all nesting birds. So there was just a few things that the tree bylaw was lacking in, and there has been discussion about the tree bylaw perhaps doesn't apply to the heritage forest because it's municipal property, right? And so that the tree bylaw is only going to apply to private property. Well, if that be the case, there really should be a reference to Sarah and Mabry in that tree bylaw, which does apply to private property as well. Is that kind of clear?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I explained that again last time around, but really, if that tree bylaw only refers to a protected tree in reference to the Wildlife Act, you're almost there, but you're not there. And so you probably don't want to have another situation like the Great Blue Heron Rookery that got cut, right? So anyway, there's just a little aside on the tree bylaw. And there is a committee of the whole meeting coming up in June of 2024.
Not now? It already happened.
Oh, okay.
Luke already has this information, but I'll make sure that Luke...
Wouldn't hurt to just...
Yes.
Figure it is again.
And if there are changes, maybe, because that was one of the things that was brought up, the fact that, you know, we're telling people what to do on their private land, and yet we're not doing the same, putting the same rules on ourselves. So there may, I don't know what it's going to look like when it comes back. So if there are changes, then that certainly should be taken into consideration, right?
You want to cover it off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I realize that between my law, there's been quite a bit of pushback on that, especially developers.
Yeah.
And, but we have federal and provincial legislation.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. And whether it's one tree or two trees or over 1 year or 2 years or whatever it is, everybody really needs to comply with federal and provincial legislation.
So an implication here. Section 34 of the Wildlife Act, 1996, refers to all birds occupying a nest. So nesting is seasonal. Would therefore developers wishing to remove a tree or a forest have to comply with this during the nesting season?
So here's a really tricky one, and I'm glad you raised that. It's Jimmy Woodpeckers. And so I did a workshop on this. That's really what made me on this. And it was with the Forest Professionals of BC. It was with 150 foresters, a Zoom call. And, oh boy, could you hear a pin drop. And the reason why, we'll get to this, the reason why they amended the Migratory Bird Act was to make it clearer for developers, forest industry, mining, all this kind of stuff. But the one real wild card is Killeen Woodpeckers. Because the tricky part about them is the Killeen Woodpecker generally will excavate a new nest each year. Other species move in. And there's no way to know, really, unless you're sitting there monitoring that cavity, what's occupying that nest, or if anything's occupying that nest. So like pileas are a really good example. So what if there was a backyard tree that had a big cavity on it? Well, you really want to comply with the Migratory Bird Act, and all a homeowner could do there would be to hire an archaeobio, you know, to sit there and observe.
So that's the case of a private property.
Yeah.
What about, I'm a forestry company, and I want to go clear cut an area that's part of my cut plan, and somebody sees a pileated hole.
They've got a problem.
And then they've got a problem with respect to this. So the other thing is, it kind of reminds me of the situation I worked up in the oil sands with Aboriginal communities, and the company had committed to save a log cabin because it had heritage value to the community. So I want you to picture this. There's an excavation 50 feet down to the bitumen all around this log cabin, and there's like this. So is that what we've got in mind for a pileated woodpecker hole in a tree?
Okay.
The irony for me is I had a tree like that, and it was occupied with pileated, and the squirrels killed the babies.
Okay.
The squirrels got into it and
killed
the babies. And they also, and about 2 years later, the tree blew down in a storm, and it broke right at the nest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was the weak spot, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is an enormous issue in terms of application law, and it goes way beyond private property or town property, for that matter.
So the loss of biodiversity has got the government's attention, right? And so that's where, you know, the amendment to the Migratory Bird Act came in. It's the Environment Climate Change Canada, formerly Canadian Wildlife Service, were the ones that really ratcheted this up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that concern about biodiversity loss.
So that's the larger issue. There's multiple forms of land use. The land use that the commission, our commission, is concerned with is heritage forests. You're involved with other community groups, and I would suggest we might just want to focus a little bit here on what is a concern of issue for the commission, and let you go the fourth in other jurisdictions. I just see it as an enormous issue.
It is an enormous issue,
yeah.
And boy, you could hear crickets at that that presentation. So that was foresters.
Uh-huh.
Boy, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, so I mean, is this a case of unintended consequences or intended consequences?
Depends on how you look at it. It's about a loss of biodiversity.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, we're covered with that conservation commitment, you know, in the heritage forest. The issue that I raised with the tree bylaw is it's very different than the heritage forest, but these are the conservation covenant, right? And so, anyway, so we're not sure whether the tree bylaw is going to apply or not. It probably won't, as it's so different. And I think people recognize that the land conservancy BC and society need to agree if this did apply to the heritage forest, then we're going to want to really take a run at that thing and have a hard look at it. Because as it is right now, we've got a conservation covenant, so it's vital, and it's a beauty.
Yeah, and so these measures would seem to me to be very easy to apply to the heritage forest. To
work out our
protected areas.
We got it. Yeah. It's just, you know, less than town. Does what, you know, with that tree bylaw. So anyway, there's been some vandalism. New topic. Saturday night, summer is coming on, and Saturday night kids hang out for us. And so there's a fairly large grand fir tree that's been snapped off. It's right next to the new picnic table in the grassy kiosk. It's about yay big around. I planted that probably a dozen years ago. And I thought maybe that's one for the arborist to go in and just cut that thing off. But it's been snapped off. It's about that big around. easy thing, or I could just go in and, you know, with my hands on to do it. But I wondered about the arborist going in. And they messed around with a few other things, or whoever did it. Maybe it was active boomers. Maybe it wasn't teenagers at all. It was those crazy active
boomers. What about a bear? Because there has been a bear around.
There has. I thought it was shot. I heard somewhere. It was, yeah, it was up last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around. It was 3 days worth. It was around our area.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bear. Anyway, vandalism. And it does happen. I've had young people tell me that we would be surprised if we knew how much activity goes on in the Heritage Forest on Saturday nights. And I, you know, I see evidence of it, but anyway.
What time do you go to bed on Saturday nights?
Well, it is posted. You know, you're not allowed in here from 11 to 7, but there's no light on the signs. I guess you start reading the signs.
It's sad, actually. It's their future, you know.
Well, and it's, like, you know, I see stuff every now and again. It's like, geez, really? So is that something that we'd want Jason to go in? Yeah, okay.
Well, I'll just have him go in, just because then he can go in and dust it and cut it right at the ground level.
Well, I'm not sure. Like, because, okay, it's the second time that season it's now.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. And, you know, when it was probably that big around, a kid snapped it off, and I just went with my snippers, just snipped the top, and then one of the laterals takes over as the leader, right?
Yes, yes.
And so, and this would, it'll survive. Like, it's a huge, big crown on it. And if Jason was just to cut that top off, one of those secondary laterals will take over.
Okay.
It's worth saving.
Okay.
You know?
Good.
We should. Okay. Hibernaculum. Okay. So, I went in on Saturday with a society member, and what we did on the Heritage Forest side of where the culvert's coming out, we piled short pieces of alder, and I put green flagging on them down by Beach Creek, well out of the way of where that construction project's going to take place. And so I think they're fine, but I just thought I'd bring it up. Looking at all that felled material, I was thinking, well, what could we do with that? At this, you know, is there anything that we can actually use it for?
Yeah,
we could build a couple of hibernaculums. So they're homes for amphibians, reptiles, martens, that kind of stuff. It'd be a fun project to do in September or whenever that construction project's done. So they're there, they're on the left-hand side as you're looking upstream. And they're well flagged in green, and I notified Oliver. So Oliver knows about that. The public works. I think we're fine on that. Now, very interesting, I was in recently, I moved the Western Screech Owl nest box on this probably 5 meter high cedar stump that's just outside of where this construction project is going to take place. And I'm standing up on top of my 6 foot step ladder when I'm drilling the nest box on the side facing the road so that the construction guys would really see it. And I've got a wildlife sign there and this kind of stuff. And it dawned on me, there's no springboard nostrils on that stuff.
Hmm.
It's an Aboriginal. It's an indigenous harvested cedar stump that's about 5 meters high. It no springboard notches in it. It's a ragtag edge around the top, like it's not cut with a crosscut saw. They use chisels. It's been chiseled, and it's been burnt out from the inside.
Wow.
What they would do. There's no charcoal on the outside of that stump, not a shred. It's all on the inside. So what they would do is build a platform to get up really high, chisel all the way around, burn it out on the inside, and perhaps let the wind take it down. That's what that is.
So what would be the purpose of taking
the harvest in? So that's how First Nations lost.
Oh, okay.
And now on Beach Creek, so now you've got a cedar lying down, and they would wedge and split slabs for house construction, flowing down Beach Creek to the beach. perfect sense. I'm going in tomorrow with an archaeologist. That one
can't move. Interesting.
And I've notified Chief Michael Ricoma and Lou Varela. I've given them all the details on this, as well as Oliver. And, but I'm convinced that's what that is. And really, the tip-off was no springboard nozzles.
Yeah.
It just dawned on me. I'm up on the ladder. It's like, oh, wait a second. This thing is locked.
Any sense of what type of a tool they were?
Chisel.
So what type of a chisel? No.
Stone.
Pre-Iron Age?
Pre-Iron. Yeah. Pre-Colonial.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So I've got the book. Hillary Stewart wrote the book on use of cedar. And it's an amazing book with all kinds of schematics and so anyway, I was reading a bunch of stuff. That's what it is.
So can that be carbon dated?
Well, no.
That would be really interesting.
Well, no, but so all you're going to know is how old is the tree.
Okay, that's not much help, is it? Because you don't
know.
Well, you know when it ended. I just don't know when it started.
So you look at what was the technique. How did this tree come down? So it's about 5 meters high, no notches with springboards, no cross cuts all across the top. It's a very right tank chisel thing, and it's burnt out on the inside.
Wow.
And perhaps the wind took it down. And it would make perfect sense to cut slabs and then float them down Beach Creek to the village sites and thousands of people that were living on the beach.
Mm-hmm. But when was there enough water in the creek?
I'm thinking that too.
There's water.
It's been bigger.
Well, slabs.
Yeah.
But that thing really gets going.
Oh, yeah.
I pop in there every now and again, and it's quite impressive. After these so-called atmospheric rivers, which weren't on that, but after heavy rain, like that thing really goes. And of course, that big mountain still wasn't there. It was just debris.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not very far.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you're down at the QBI. Anyway, I'll find out more about it. So, that's all I had.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
It's amazing what goes on with that heritage forest. I am constantly quite amazed. Does anybody have anything to add? No? Motion to adjourn?
Sure.
Okay. We're done.